This is the John Young interview for
Worked with the Marshall Space Flight guys on the way the hand controller worked, and they had it working so that you moved it like you move a control stick in yaw, which would be with your wrist, and we had it, and that would be for roll, I mean for steering, and then we actually changed the handle so that you moved it like you had a fitting on top, so you moved it from left to right, just like you roll a steering wheel. It became very easy to drive that way, but in the pressure suit, you couldn't move your wrist and yaw a lot. Your wrist would be so tired, you wouldn't be able to drive after about 2 or 3 minutes.
It was originally a pistol grip design, and they had to change it.
Yep, we changed it to roll. We rolled on the top, and we did that, and Charlie Duke was instrumental in getting the deployment system changed from automatic to semi-automatic, because the automatic system didn't work.
Yes, I'll be interviewing you next week.
Okay, he can tell you all that. Drove it a lot, and the Marshall guys had a motion-based simulator that we drove it in, and behaved like 1/6 gravity, and we allegedly put in the same inputs as the real one would do, and we drove it all over the place, and that motion-based simulator proved that the stuff would work right and wouldn't be too inconvenient to operate, and that the switches and stuff and everything was placed right for crew action.
I see. When you first learned about the LRV going on the 15, 16, 17 missions, how did you feel about the prospect of having a rover helping your exploration?
Well, there's just no way that human beings could get around the moon as much as we should get around the moon to explore it without having some capability to go a lot faster than you could walk, and so or just even run. Good old rover. Well, I guess we get it up to about 10 miles an hour, 16 kilometers a second, or 15 kilometers an hour. So anyway, so it worked great. We on our mission, we climbed a steeper than 20 degree hill because we bottomed out they had a thing on there that told you what your pitch was, and we bottomed it out and broke it off. So, I was really surprised when I looked back down Stone Mountain. I wondered how we got up that steep hill.
That's what it was called, Stone Mountain.
I guess one of the places we were going all over the place on our mission. They thought we named them various things.
Yes. Let me back up a little bit here. Where did you train using the 1G trainer? I understand they built at least
we trained down at the Cape. We had a rock pile down there and a place that where you could explore and move, maneuver and go pick up exotic rocks. They had a they put rocks from all over the place down there, and our object was to go along and do the same kind of field stops that we do on the moon at about the same place and pick up and examine the rocks and pick up the ones that were interesting. So.
I see. Okay. There were specific test goals with any new aircraft, for example. Were there test goals using the 1G trainer?
Well, we just drove it around to see how it worked, and this was after the thing was all put together. All the test goals were accomplished on those simulators, on the motion-based simulators, in terms of designing it so that it would work right and that would operate. You know, General Motors built the suspension system. It was great.
Oh, that's good.
And, you know, the way the thing was built was to all four wheels with individual gearing so that if you could lose three out of the gearing to three out of four wheels, still keep driving. And so individually. And then, of course, it had two sets of batteries, one of which would power. So you could lose one set of batteries and keep driving. And then individually powered to various places all over. So it had a lot of redundancy in it. All that was proven out. And, of course, we never needed it. It had a range of about 50 miles. And, of course, nobody ever came close to using all the range of it.
Well, that seemed to be an irony with the LRV because it was capable of taking you much, much further. Yet, I guess there were restrictions on how far you could go in case something went wrong and you had to walk back.
Yeah, traverses were designed so that you went the furthest at the first part of your mission, so that if something failed and you couldn't, and the rover wouldn't work, you could you still have enough oxygen to get back to the ship.
Right.
And so that's how it was designed. And, made a lot of sense to me under the circumstances.
Yeah.
So we never were further away from the ship than we could get back with the oxygen we had left in our backpack.
Okay. I have a photograph of you and I believe General Duke while the LRV-2 was being stowed on the Orion at KSC.
Yeah.
So what was that closeout procedure like? What were the you basically supervised it?
No, we didn't supervise it. We just watched the guys close it out, and because we had to get it off there. You know, we just folded it up like a house of cards on the side of the vehicle.
Yes.
And it would unfold, and since it was semi-automatic, there were things you had to do manually to put the wheels in place and rig up everything so it would come out right and unfold the body and stuff. And so it was pretty straightforward, really, but it was just a lot of just crew interaction because you didn't want it. It was all automatic. It probably wouldn't have worked under the circumstances.
But before this was done, I also have a photograph of the both of you fully suited on that LRV in front of the lunar lander there. I guess they're doing a complete systems check or something and want to know how I should capture that photograph because this was done just prior to the stowing of the vehicle, I would guess.
Yep, we're just checking it out.
Okay.
Making sure that, these things are all hand-built, so you've got to make sure that each one of them wore the shoulders, was the seat belts really where it was, and did the seat really go up like you thought it should, and stuff like this, because actually there are no two rovers alike, since they're hand-built.
Yes. Well, let me move forward here a little bit. I've been reading descriptions of what the launches were like with the Saturn V. At least a few of the descriptions with the Provo effect, it was quite violent. Were there any concerns that the rover might suffer some damage during the launch phase because it wasn't, if you were in on the way to the moon, it was pretty calm?
Well, no, it was all, Saturn V launch wasn't too bad in terms of G-forces. And they didn't have pogos on our mission, so we didn't worry about it on 15, 16, and 17, there was no pogo effect. But, yeah, there was the second stage shut down the first stage. Shut everything down and unloaded, and the second stage was on the top of it. It was thin like a beer can, so it was bogged out as soon as it, as soon as the thing shut down to zero gravity, while it just unloaded and sprung you back and forth like you're on a yo-yo for two or three cycles, and that was pretty violent, but I don't think any of that hurt me. It was all designed with no damage to the rover or any of the, there's a lot of other, scientific experiments, all lunar science experiments were all stowed on the side of the orbiter. We had a telescope stowed on our mission, and a lot of other equipment was stowed on the side of the lunar module. It was all stowed up there, so, you know, that it had any damage.
Well, after Orion landed, and you were the commander, so you were first off the lander. What did the landing area around the module look like? The deep carpet? What did it look like?
Well, it was pervasive in the number of craters it had. It was just 100% crater, and we landed fortunately in the middle of a big flat 75 meter across crater, and we landed about as flat as you could land. I'd say 3-4 meters off the side of a 10-meter crater. So, if we'd landed in that, we'd have been in real trouble. But we landed away from it. So,
it was a pretty rugged environment.
Oh yeah, it was very, very cratery, and it was sort of softly rolling, it looked like. But there are places where there are block fields with rays from these new craters. Lock fields and stuff. What I was worried about when driving the rover at the cart was that we'd run across one of these block fields and take out the suspension system. And I had that happen to me while we're doing geology transverses on the Earth. Yeah, the guy took his truck and ran it over a big rock and took the suspension out. And unfortunately, we're 3 or 4 miles from our buddies, and it was up in Tonopah, Nevada. We had to run back and catch the other fellas. Before they left that night, been pretty bad staying out in the middle of the Tonopah at that time of year. Been cold.
When you surveyed all this lunar debris, so to speak, did you think that would pose a problem to the rover?
No, I don't think so. I was worried about the block field, so we were very careful in going around all the blocks and stuff and not running over any of them. Driving up the hills and through the craters very carefully to make sure we didn't run into anything and hit anything.
Okay. About roughly how long did it take to deploy the rover? Because I haven't spoken with anyone yet who's done that.
I can't remember, but I think it's about 10 minutes. What's
really?
Is
that all?
Oh, yeah. You just go out there and pull these straps and you're in business.
Okay.
And then, unfold stuff and set it up. It wasn't very long.
Did you, once it was deployed and away from the lander, did you test drive the RV prior to outfitting?
Yeah, we tested over a little bit. Just to make sure it worked all right.
Check all the systems out, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. How did the LRV perform?
It's great. It has Ackerman steering, so it'll turn on its radius. It'll turn in its own lane. So it's really a great. Very maneuverable and did exactly what we wanted to in terms of getting us around fast and getting us to long places, to places we could never have gotten to walking. And I think it's a real addition to lunar exploration. We still don't know very much about the moon, so get back up there. We'll have pressurized long range rovers that can probably stay up there for days away from where you're headed for, and do a lot of exploring because we don't know really very much about it.
Well, I looked at the various EVA routes for the three missions, and you're absolutely right. In that context, so little has been seen, and there is so much yet to see, that would be worthwhile. I hope to see in their lifetime.
Well, it's a 14,500,000 square miles of country, and you know, somebody could figure out how many square miles we've looked at, but it isn't a hill to be.
Right. So basically you're saying that if it weren't for the rover, on your particular mission, you generally would have, it made possible a lot of discoveries.
Oh yeah, and actually, at our site, they predicted we'd find rhyolite volcanic rocks, and there were no rhyolite volcanic rocks up there. They're all anorthosites and anorthositic breccias and things like that. And it's a totally different kind of rock. It's a Highlands rock, and everybody predicted we'd find the other kind. In fact, they argued with us all the way back, almost when we left the moon, that we had that spider pilots had picked up the right kind of rock. So. Well, we'd studied that a lot. You know, we'd had a lot of field trips. Charlie and I had, what was over with, we backed up 17. We had about 30 field trips, or 35 field trips, where we were putting rocks all over the country. We pretty much knew a rock from a reel, you know. So, anyhow, so we'd been pretty well trained, and it was real, but it was really interesting to find out that the rocks were different.
I see. I remember seeing
Charlie.
Well, Charlie told me that he, of course, didn't run the movie camera when you were doing your high-speed run. What? That's rather famous. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, it was straight bore. Actually, it wasn't a very high-speed run when he was running the movie camera. It was just, you mean the one he was off to the side there?
Actually, the vehicle, I don't know if it got airborne, but it looked like it was bumping around.
Oh yeah. That's you got the picture of the way that it bumped up and down. And of course, that's just 1/6 gravity. When the vehicle's in 1/6 gravity, I forget what it weighed, 1,200 some pounds, fully loaded. Of course, 1/6 gravity divides all that by 6, so you don't have very much of a load going up and down. So it'd spring right off the ground when you ran into a small crater. Well, I think the general outline of the site that we're at, and what the kind of rocks it was made of, and what the composition was, and it's a very tough rock pile because people are still arguing about it. It's found to be, on average, 3.92 billion years old, so it's a very old site.
And of course, if the moon's there, the moon could have been there, but the air was there, so.
Yep.
The air could probably have been older, who knows.
Oh yeah, 4.6. That's what the guys say, the scientists. Well, they say the moon formed, about 4 or something years ago, and I don't know whether it was or not.
Okay.
But we found rocks. We found rocks at our rock site that were, some of the class in the rocks we found were age dated at 4.2 to 4.5, 4.2 to 4.5 billion years old, so that says the moon was around 4.5. I think it was a very great vehicle in terms of what it did, and of course I say, like, when we go back, I think it wouldn't be uncommon to have a great big rover, maybe big as I'm talking about the future, you'd be inflatable, so it could be as big as a boxcar, and you could have a mission control center in there, and you could be running, 50 or 60 micro rovers around the surface, and when you see something of interest, so you have an airlock on this rover, so you put the people out there and work in the vacuum, and future visitors to the moon won't spend all their lives, won't spend days working in the vacuum unless they really need to, in areas that are really interesting, like if there really is water at the south pole of the moon, and strange minerals, which I'm sure there is, with all these hits up there, there's got to be some very exotic and very high grade ores and minerals up there that's probably be useful. I think Well, I think for the next century, the moon is going to save us because I think we'll be able to ship electrical power from the sun to the Earth real economically for the long-term benefit of people on the planet, and real reliably. And, you know, reliable, uninterruptible electrical power probably ought to be a goal of the United States, at least. We sure don't have it right. Helium-3, yeah, and, you know, but it may be helium-3, I don't know, it's they say it's 10 times the temperature that regular nuclear fusion has, so we may be a ways away from generating power with helium-3 from a nuclear fusion in a way, and he's often said that a shuttle load of helium-3 would generate the electrical power for the United States, and I wouldn't be surprised, but I still say for the near term, we're going to have the South Pole of the Moon. There's places down at the South Pole that only 70 hours a year are not in sunlight, so you can ship reliable electrical power from the South Pole of the Moon to the Earth, and that's where we ought to put our prototype plants, electrical transmission plants on this hill down there. Ship electrical power to the Earth and see how that works. And I think, rovers will be the key to the exploration of large areas of places like the South Pole. You know, the South Pole has the largest, if not the largest crater in the solar system, darn near it. It's 2,500 kilometers across down there, and then 28, something like that, some big number in 2,800 kilometers. That's a big hole. Give us information on the rocks in the deep center of the moon, too. And a lot of those mineral resources, I believe, will be down there.
Well,
and of course, they say there's water down there. I don't know if there is or not. That's what the evidence is. I think Jack doesn't believe it. I think he thinks it's all hydrogen.
Well, that was quite a coup to try to get a geologist on the mission. I know there was some people doing that, but hopefully I can touch base with him, too. I've written to him as well as David Scott.
David's a great guy.
I have not heard back from him yet, so hopefully.
Well, I wish you luck with your article. It's pretty tough to write about something that long ago. At least you got the pictures, huh?
Yes, I do, and okay. I've got some very valuable quotes from you, so I do appreciate it, and I'll contact Ms. Lewinsky to send the rough draft when it's finished. It'll take me about 6-8 weeks, but then I'll get it all to you and you can check it out.
Well, I wish you luck with that article, because I'll tell you, I think it's just a coming thing. Get back up there, we'll have big rovers and fast rovers and very reliable rovers. I think maybe even it wouldn't be a bad idea. There's the Department of Energy could put 300 kilowatts in a garbage can with uranium and stuff, and if you had your next rover might be nuclear powered up there on the moon. It supplies nuclear power stuff, supply electricity, and you can tote it on a 100-meter beam behind it. Like a wheelbarrow or something on the back of the car, so you wouldn't be too near that radiation. But I think having reliable electrical power up there on the moon for starters would be really great. Well, take it easy.
Thanks so much.
I wish you luck.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.